Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey guys, this is Erica Ramirez, senior editor at Billboard, and with me today I have Clover Hope, deputy editor at Vibe magazine, and Keith Murphy, which is writer, editor, extraordinaire, does everything pretty much, writes for everyone.
thank you.
So this episode of the podcast is dedicated to Michael Jackson and Prince, seeing that this week marks the 30-year anniversary of Purple Rain and also the 5-year anniversary of MJ's passing. We also have Charlie Murphy calling in a little bit. But before that, I wanted to talk about MJ first and foremost. It was 5 years. Do you guys remember where you were when you first heard that MJ passed?
I was actually working at XXL at the time. And I remember just being in my cubicle and I saw the news that I think it was like he was in the ambulance or something like that. And everybody was kind of like, what's happening? And then it was toward the end of the day. So by the time I got home, I heard like the confirmation and I was like all over Twitter. And just, I remember everybody trying to figure out what was real or not, like, cause TMZ had it and nobody believed TMZ at that time. So then CNN confirmed it and it was like, all right, it was, you know, I teared up and like just started playing like every Michael Jackson song like in the world. And yeah, it was just like really sad.
Yeah, I was at Vibe, oddly enough, and we were just, you know, it was crazy because I was going to go to the actual shows overseas.
Mm, yes.
Booked a ticket, excited, you know, it's like, hey, it might be the last time I get to see Michael Jackson, you know, before he's...
This is it.
You know, this is it, this is it tour. You know, everybody was talking about the special effects. And so we're just sitting down and I'm, you know, typing some stuff out. And then I'm just hearing this, like you said, the rumors of, you know, something's wrong with Michael Jackson. And then you talk about, oh, it's the ambulance. They're putting him in an ambulance. Okay, that's shook up enough. When he passed... It was almost like my own life going before my eyes. Like, it's like I just remembered everything connected to Michael Jackson because that's what happens. You know, he's your gateway drug for music if you're a music fan. It's like you're 7 years old, 6 years old, and you just remember listening to Michael Jackson. So it hit pretty hard for me. It really did. So
what were some of the things that you thought of?
I just thought of, you know, being with my cousins, you know, playing off the wall. Thought about being a kid listening to the Jackson 5 Christmas album. You know, I thought about my auntie taking me to go see them at the Triumph tour. I think I was maybe like 9 years old, you know, screaming my head off, you know.
I wish I saw him on tour. That was was like my first thought. Well, not the first thought.
But, I tell everybody that it's certain artists that you really want to see in their prime. Because you're not really doing justice by, you know, looking at Michael Jackson in the 90s or whatever. So
yeah, I was gonna say I remember like the Jackson 5 CD that my dad had, and like me and my sisters would play it like ABC and, you know, Rockin' Robin and all those songs and just sing it. So everybody has like their childhood memories, and then he kind of grew up like, as with any artist, like you grew up with him. So
right.
No,
it's strange too when you almost didn't get a sense that he actually died, because you talked about TMZ. I call that moment the moment that TMZ became respectable.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people were disrespecting TMZ. They were saying, oh, this can't be true. They've been right about everything since. Everything.
Well, Hold on. Give me 1 second, because now he's calling. That little wing. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Well, you know, you can't hit 1,000. Can't bat 1,000.
I was going to say the same thing about Lil Wayne. I think they went a little too far in saying that Lil Wayne was going to die. Right. Was it last year? No, the year. Yeah, I think it was last year. Charlie?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. What's up?
I have Keith Murphy, which you talked to not too long ago. For Vibe? Did you talk to him for Vibe?
Yeah, it was for Vibe, yeah.
And I have Clover Hope here with me also. She's an editor at Vibe also.
Hi.
Keith and Clover. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
How's it going? I don't know if this is too early of a time for you.
Not at all. I got kids, man. So early is better than late, you know?
We were just talking about Michael Jackson. And I asked Keith and Clover kind of where they were when MJ passed. Do you remember what you were doing when MJ passed 5 years ago?
I remember exactly what I was doing. I was filming that movie, Family Wedding. I was on the set. And Warren Sapp, the football player, it was lunchtime. Everybody was sitting around eating and talking. And then he came over and said, yo, man, Michael Jackson just passed away. And then it became the Twilight Zone. Michael Jackson passing away was kind of like that was somebody who wasn't supposed to ever pass away. That type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
That's how much of a shock it was. I mean, I know everyone passes away eventually, but when he passed away, it was like, that's impossible. It can't be true. You know what I'm saying?
Superman passing away, almost.
Yeah, it was like an immortal being passing away. Exactly. It reminded you real quick that this is show business. He had a great show. The show was so great that we forgot that he was a human just like us.
Yeah.
I was wondering why there, or wish there was a true Hollywood story from you and Chappelle on MJ. Why wasn't there ever an MJ one?
I'm sure they would have got around to it, but you know we had 2 seasons and the show was over. There's a lot of things that probably would have taken place if the show had stayed on. You know?
Right. I heard you. You came on. You showed up with Chappelle on Sunday. I think you came to a Sunday show.
Yep. Epic. It was, you know, I'm really grateful that that show took place when it took place, because when Chappelle's show ended, I couldn't have done what I did Sunday. I wasn't a polished stand-up comedian then. You know, it happened when I was ready, and that was good. I'm glad that, you know, the forces of the nature made everybody wait up for me, you know. The fact that we was working the same venue, you know, that was a good feeling. You know, it's like, you know, that's family. Dave is family, you know. So the fact that Dave is back the way he's back is that's warming to the heart in itself, you know. So the whole fact that it was history, you know. Dave broke a record. He did 11 shows, sold out straight. No stand-up comedian has ever done that at Radio City Hall in the history of the building. It was sold out, and he had, you know, a cavalcade. He had everybody. He had Nas. He had The Roots. He had Erykah Badu. He had Kanye West. I mean, come on. He had all these different people came through and performed on the show. I hope that he's turned that into a concert movie. That's all I can say. People be under the impression sometimes that just because a person is funny, that they can just walk out and just do an hour off the top of their head. That person don't exist. There's nobody in stand-up that does that. That is a powerhouse that has a name that people, you know, respond to and rush out to go see them. That's a person that they honed the show, they did their homework, and, you know, they're not guessing when they go up there. You know, they got it all down.
Charlie, would you say that Radio City gig was your biggest gig to date as a comedian?
For me, absolutely, because, you know, it was the first time that I was in front of that many people as a stand-up comedian, and I was in total control. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been in front of bigger audiences, but when I wasn't in total control. What I mean by that is I wasn't – all the skills that come in to play as a stand-up comedian, they don't just show up all at one time, okay? Your confidence doesn't be, it's not going to be there, you know, in the beginning like it is now. And all those things take time to, like, to, you know, to stew and it turn into something good, you know? Well, I've had 11 years straight of being on the road. I've been around the world 3 times. I've been in front of all kind of people, audiences of different sizes. Like I said, I've been in front of a bigger audience than that. But that was the first time when I was aggressive with it. You know, like, okay, I know that this is, I'm eating this. I'm coming here to devour this whole show. I'm getting ready to do it. You know, that's the attitude that I had. And that's the reason why it was so fulfilling.
I know you guys have kind of your own things going on. Do you guys talk about teaming up again for something? Not necessarily even if it's a show, just like for a project.
I'm gonna tell you something. Me personally, I don't talk to nobody about teaming up or doing. I don't know where your head may be with that. And I you know, before me and Dave are friends as performers. I'm his friend. You know, I really care about him, you know, as a friend. So, you know, until he was ready, you know, I never put no pressure on him. And I don't do that as a rule of thumb with anyone. You know, I don't want you to not want to talk to me because you're scared of what I'm going to bring up. You know, so I keep it general. You know, one of the good things, one of the safest things to talk about with entertainers is kids. You know, I don't talk about show business too much with them. I talk about family, life. I talk about kids. I talk about stuff like that. I don't really come with, you know, the business talk unless we're having a meeting. You know what I'm saying? If we ain't having a meeting that was, you know, that's supposed to cover these, you know, these the subjects, I don't even go into them. I keep it real loose, real friendly, man, because, you know, I understand that sometimes, you know, people have things they don't want to talk about, or they think certain things that make them feel under pressure. So I don't do that. You know,
yeah.
I don't want you to see me as a person that, you know, my only interest in you is how can I exploit the relationship to make money. You know,
one of the funniest sketches on the Chappelle Show has to be, at least my favorite, was the Prince one that you did. Did you know it was going to be as crazy?
I didn't have no idea that any of that stuff was going to do what it did. That was, you know, it was, at most, I was happy that I was on a show that I can contribute to as far as material and, you know, it got done. Because when you're on a sketch comedy show, everybody's writing sketches and submitting them and trying to get them put on the air. That's the competition, you know, and so to have things that you came up with that got put on the air, not only on the air, but they, you know, they became synonymous with the show. That's, you know, that's, you know, you can't, I wasn't aiming for that. That's what happened, you know.
You know, Charlie, we spoke about that for the New York Post piece that I did, and the great thing about it is Prince's own sense of humor, how he was able to turn it all around and use the Chappelle iconic now, is really iconic, a photo of him dressed as Prince. What makes you, how do you look at that when you see an artist of his stature to be able to laugh at himself in that manner?
Well, that tells me that he's that crazy. That tells me that he's Prince. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't take himself too serious. If you can't laugh at yourself, you don't deserve to laugh at nobody else or with anybody else. I mean, you know, if you think that you're above the fray where, you know, and nothing can be said funny about me. My attitude about and my approach to comedy is that there's no holds barred, nobody's above reproach. And if I think of something funny to say about you, if it's funny, then I think the world should hear it and laugh about it. Period. You know? There's certain things, like when over the years I've learned that, you know, with certain people, there's certain demographics, there's certain, like for instance, if you go and do a joke about Oprah, right? It better be funny, because when the audience realizes, oh, this one is about Oprah, all the women catch an attitude instantly. They go, hey, don't say anything about Oprah. Or if you say a joke about Jay-Z and Beyonce, you might get shot. Hey, don't be talking about Bane. Hey, they get messed up on that. But if you know what I'm saying, if you can come up with something that's very funny, they will laugh But there's going to be a resistance in the beginning. Same thing with Michael Jackson. You know, I had jokes about him. If you, when you first start telling a joke and they realize, oh, this joke is about so-and-so, there's people their love for that person is almost to a point of worship, which I think is ridiculous because, you know, you're not supposed to worship other people, okay? Yeah. But there's people that do that. That's why, you know, a fan is, the word fan is short for a fanatic. You know? That's a form of crazy, ain't it? Fanatic. Yeah. So there's some people that, you know, they can't, they'll be into the artist so much where it's almost like a form of worship. And you have certain people, like I said, that when you start talking about them, right off the top, the first reaction you get is, a rebuff. You know, like, hey, you can't talk about Michelle Obama. You can't talk about this one. You can't. And my thing is this. I can talk about whoever I want. Because guess what? They can all talk about me. And if they said something about me and it was funny and everybody was laughing, hey, good for you. I'll return with a joke myself. But I don't think that anyone should be take themselves so seriously or anyone else to the point where, you know, they're above reproach when it comes to comedy.
Why do you think so many years later we still care about Michael and Prince in the manner that we do? It's almost like they're like joined at the hip.
A lot of people in the Michael and Prince, they're like Prince. Michael Jackson was when I was a kid. I remember walking to the bus stop and, I Want You Back was the hit record. And all the kids knew it. I remember getting the album, and it had I Want You Back, and it had Bridge Over Troubled Waters by Jermaine and all these other songs they had on there, Rockin' Robin. That album, I remember getting it. That was like one of the first albums that I considered my album. Like, you know, it wasn't for my parents, it was for me. It was a big old one of those 8-tracks, you know what I'm saying? It's an 8-track, and we had it, and we memorized the songs and all that. You know, we were little kids, man. You know, and you know, we were into the Jackson 5, like all the other kids our age. You know, because the Jackson 5 was kids like us. You know, but they were singers. I remember the Jackson 5 coming out. I remember when the Osmonds came out, and I thought that was Michael Jackson. I remember getting mad when I found out that this is not Michael Jackson. When the Osmonds dropped One Bad Apple, I was like, well, that's a good record. And they was like, that ain't Michael Jackson. That's the Osmonds. And I was like, who's the Osmonds? You know? And I remember when the Silvers came out, you know, they had that record, Hey Prudence. I was like, oh, the Jackson 5? No, that's not the Jackson 5. That's the Silvers, you know? And I remember being disappointed that someone else sounded just like them when it wasn't them, you know?
Do you remember seeing the Remember the Time video for the first time? Like, with Eddie in it and, you know, kind of what your reaction was?
I was there when they shot the Remember the Time video. It was an awesome, you know, I mean, that was a video. It was produced like a feature film, you know, and I really enjoyed the process, you know, watching it. They had a lot. Magic Johnson was in it, you know. Magic is, like, you know, iconic. He was iconic very much so when he did that video, you know, and just to be on the set and all these big stars is walking around, that was awesome.
Wow. And in the 80s, I know you was hanging out with your brother a lot. Did you happen to go to the Purple Rain tour when it was popping in L.A.? Because I think they did, like, crazy amount of shows at the Forum. Did you go to any of those shows?
I went to the premiere of Purple Rain.
How crazy was that?
That was the set off, the jump off, man. I remember that night, Eddie got at the end of it when we left, Eddie got mobbed in the parking lot, and his manager Bob Wax got trampled by the crowd. I remember that. It was like, you know, what did Bob just fell down?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
They're stepping on them. To try to get to Eddie, you know what I'm saying? So I had seen Eddie get mobbed before, you know what I'm saying? So that wasn't a new experience. He got mobbed several times. That was the time when, you know, we was leaving the premiere. And I think that we were so excited about the show and everything that we were kind of caught off guard with that.
Do you think we're ever going to see the artist of, you know, Michael Jackson, Prince magnitude? Are we ever going to see anybody on that level again?
Absolutely. We're human beings, man. You know what I'm saying? You're going to see better than that. You know what I'm saying? You're going to see, if you go back to before Michael existed, there's somebody that the world felt that way about before they felt that way about him. It was Elvis. You know, Elvis had the same thing going on, you know? If you go back before him, it's somebody else that everybody liked, you know? It's a generational thing. You know, as people grow up, they come into their own, they have their own, for their generation, they have their own mega star that they cleave on to, and they have those feelings. Like right now, I'm going to say right now, at one point, Justin Bieber was that for the young kids. All the kids was loving Justin Bieber. But now it may be different. I don't know, because he got into trouble a couple times, and that may have changed things. But before that, he was, you know, all the kids was on Justin Bieber.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say Beyonce right now has,
yeah,
if not that title, then about to have that title.
I see that comparison more than Justin.
The Beyonce,
like,
and Michael.
Beyonce, Michael.
You know, I won't agree with that because men are not into Beyonce like, you know, like women and women and gay men are into Beyonce like that. Michael Jackson had everybody. He had the men, the women, the gays, everybody was on him. So that's different. Elvis Presley had everybody. Beyonce, say, guys, young guys don't be rushing out to buy no Beyonce record. Okay? They'll go
for
buy Jay-Z.
Only for their girls.
Only for their girls.
My daughter, yeah, she's on Beyonce. She likes Beyonce. Of course. She's, you know, she loves her. You know? All of them. That's what I'm saying. When you, that's why we try to make a joke about Beyonce. All the women automatically go, hey, hey, hey. When we talking about babe. Don't be talking about babe. They get excited. I'm like, okay, look, okay.
Is Beyonce like your daughter's first big favorite artist? Is she your daughter's favorite artist right now?
My daughter has a couple of them, you know. And me personally, I think that Beyonce is the most talented woman on the planet, when, you know, all around. Period. Bar none. I mean, I've heard her sing in different languages and all kind of stuff, and kill it, you know what I'm saying? I heard of, you know, opera. I mean, come on, how many people could switch up and do that, you know? There's nobody that can match her talent-wise, you know? She's all around. She is the alpha of the game right now when it comes to what she does, definitely.
You know, I always wanted to ask you, did Prince ever reach out to you after the Chappelle show? Did he ever say anything to you?
Never like, reached out to me, never, no, never. Nope.
Okay. I guess using that as his cover kind of speaks loudly.
I don't know what his reasons is, you know. At one point, I used to think that he didn't like me, but I'm beyond that now. I don't really care if he likes me or not. But that's what I used to go, he must not like me for some reason, you know. But I don't care if you don't like me anymore. I know I like him. I love him. I love his music and all that. I give him all his props. I don't walk around worried about, you know, who don't like me or whatever. The ones that do like me, they talk to me, they're my friends. The people that don't reach out to you, that don't call you, whatever, just for whatever reason. It's a million different reasons why that could be going down. So for me to pick one out and say this is what I believe, if I'm not, if you didn't tell me personally, I really don't know what the reason is. So I don't worry about it.
We talked about the sketch, but Purple Rain specifically, how crazy was that, the actual album and movie? How crazy was that for you when you first heard it?
The album is like part of it, that marks a period in my life. That record is like, okay, this is what was going on in your life when that record came out. When Doves Cry or anything, I can remember exactly where I was at mentally, spiritually, physically, everything, you know, as a human being. And it marks a period in my life. It was a very fun period. That's when Eddie was doing, it might have been Beverly Hills Cop or one of those movies that he was doing. We were staying in L.A. And the lifestyle was, it was exactly like Entourage, okay, or the Mad Real World, okay? It was a bunch of everybody was under 30, and it was a big giant house, and you know what goes. If you watch those shows, it's the same dynamic was going on for real in our life, you know?
You get a sense when the movie came out, did you realize how big the movie, the Purple Rain movie, was going to be? And did you ever think to yourself, you know what, a lot of African Americans in the 80s, you were really coming up. My brother, Michael, Prince, it seemed like black folks was really, really doing it in the 80s.
I never thought that because you just named three people. That's not many, bro. That's not enough for me to go, oh, yeah, black folks is really killing it. It's three people you just named. Okay? And when I went to Hollywood, that's what it was like. You had one guy from basketball, it was Magic, okay? You had one guy from comedy, that was Eddie. You had one guy from music, that was Prince, because Michael Jackson was kind of like cooling off a little bit during that period. And we had one of everything, one. And only now or recently can you look around and go, okay, wait a minute. There are a gang of basketball stars that people are into. There are a gang of musicians that people are into that are black. There are a gang of comedians that are black that people know their names. And they back then it wasn't a whole bunch of each thing. And now there's several. So now I'll go, things are a whole lot better. But it's still we still have a long way to go, because if you go into an airport, for instance, right, going to the magazine section, okay, in this country, America, and you look in the magazine section, 99.9% of the magazine covers have white artists on it, okay? Not Latino, not Asian, not black, not Arab, white, okay? Well, we don't live in England, okay? And I'm talking about, even if you lived in England, you couldn't say that anymore, but this is not England, this is the U.S. Everybody is here, and everybody is not equally represented in the media. You know, that's just, a reality, you know? Everybody's not, every year the sexiest man in the world is another white guy. That's every year. The only time the sexiest man in the world was black, it was Denzel Washington. That was it. Cut. And then, you know, everybody else. I guess we don't have no other sexy black men. You know what I'm saying?
I guess we're not that sexy, huh?
All right. What else do you have coming up? Because I know you have a show. I think you have a show tonight.
I have a show in Syracuse tonight, tomorrow, actually. But I have a debut on the Adult Swim in August. It's called Black Jesus. It's produced and written by Aaron Magruder, the guy who did the Boondocks. That's how I developed a relationship with Aaron. I was on the Boondocks. My character was Ed III. He was real popular. And, when they decided to do Black Jesus, they called me in, and I played the character called Vic on there. And I can't wait for people to see that, because I know it's going to have a lot of tongues wagging. It's going to be a lot of judgment and a lot of things that go down. But at the end of the day, I want people to remember one thing, man. It's entertainment. You know? You know what I'm saying? I'm not a preacher. I'm not a politician. I'm an entertainer. And whatever I'm involved with is for entertainment purposes, you know?
Well, I appreciate you coming on to talk to us about pretty much everything.
I appreciate you guys including me in your piece, man. That's what's up. Peace and God bless. One.
I want to talk more about MJ and Prince, but only have like 6 minutes in this conference room.
Okay. Well, I'll just say that I just found the whole thing very, very interesting that the 30th anniversary fell on Michael's death.
Yeah.
And to me, it just said how still these guys are still joined at the hip after all these years.
Right. You brought that up with Charlie.
Yeah. So that's so weird to me.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing for you?
I think it's a good thing because it happens in other artists too. I mean, people feel the same way about the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. It's the same thing.
Right.
You know, everybody has to have the white hat and the black hat, you know? There has to be the yin and the yang. So, you know, even each other out. And I think that's what Michael Jackson is. You know, he wears the white hat and Prince wears the black hat. So,
do you think Prince was like a little bit more, I think so, was a little bit more dangerous?
Oh, he was a lot more dangerous.
Yeah.
He literally.
Sexual, more dangerous.
Darling Nikki kickstarted the PMRC, which kickstarted stickers on CDs. Before Prince, there were no, you know, parental guide, you know, that's the reason why they decided to do it. Like, you know, holy shit, somebody's listening to, my daughter's listening to Darling Nikki. I can't believe this. Let's go to Congress, and the rest is history.
One thing he mentioned was like, just like somebody being a successor, I guess, to Michael and Beyonce being like the closest thing. And one thing that like I haven't seen from pop artists is just kind of the way that Michael had like worldly songs that were still catchy. Like they had a message to it. Think about like Beat It and just being in like the neighborhood that you're not quote unquote supposed to be in or whatever. Or, you know, Black or White obviously had a message to it, but it was also like you wanted to dance to it, you know? So
Man in the Mirror.
Yeah, Man in the Mirror is like probably my favorite MJ song.
I just think that we're too jaded nowadays. Like we would look at somebody that would want to save the world, heal the world as being corny.
There'd probably be memes about it.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be, you know.
We're a little too, do you think we're more critical also? I feel like we're critical over everything more.
Well, I think everybody wants to be a star now. It's instant stardom. So when it's instant stardom, this is what, you remember we talked about earlier about the comment section? This is how people become stars. They become stars in their own world by becoming internet sensations or trolls. Yeah. And that's the new stardom. You know, before you just, in the 80s, could you picture if Michael Jackson and Prince was on MTV, you can picture some cat sitting down in their sofa talking shit about them. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the access to type it out, but there were always people that, you know, talking, you know. It's just now that we have the access to do it now, you know.
I think that, yeah, and it's also, I think we mentioned this earlier, it's always been like an MJ versus Prince thing, but I think it boils down to who you grew up listening to more, not to say one is above the other or anything like that.
Well, yeah, I have a couple of pieces, that I did yesterday in conjunction with the Purple Rain 30th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Where I spoke to, you can go on Vibe.com right now and check it out.
Shout out to Vibe.
where I talked to the Revolution, the backing band of Prince during that era, the Revolution. I talked to the keyboardist, Dr. Fink. And I spoke to Susan Rogers, who was his engineer. And if you know anything about that era of music, Prince was almost recording a song a day. Literally, and he went through engineers like crazy. Like they couldn't keep up with him. This is a cat that had 4 hours of sleep, working, touring, going to an after show, performing there, hitting a studio at 1 a.m, working on somebody else's project and working on his stuff. I mean, this is, you know, when Charlie said we're going to see people like this again, I kind of disagree with that because.
Because of that worth ethic.
Yeah, and because they allowed you to do this back then. It was the Wild Wild West. Everything is a bit crazier now, but they still try to box you in with certain things. The internet is the great equalizer. But back then, it was like, oh, you mean I can build my own complex called Paisley Park? I can build Neverland? I can make Thriller? I can make a movie, you know, and you're going to... I can get Martin Scorsese to direct me in Bad, or I can try to get Prince to come on here with me, but he's going to say no because he's, you know, I mean, the relationship between those two, to me, is the reason why people care. And I remember then I did the oral history about those two in a relationship. And secretly, they were friends, actually, you know. But they just knew that they could not step on each other's toes. And they just kind of gave each other space.
Right.
You know.
Were you going to say something, Clover?
No.
No.
I was going to say something about Beyonce, but.
Yeah. No, Beyonce. Listen. Quiet is kept. I really do think Beyonce does come the closest. I think you were right.
I mean,
I know Charlie said, you know, it was just...
that men don't listen to Beyonce.
Yeah. But I, secretly, let me tell you something. Just
girls
as a
love
man,
Beyonce.
Yeah, as a man, I don't love Beyonce, but I can honestly say that I...
This is a good... You could admit it on this
I can honestly say that I like Beyonce and I like her talent. I'm glad that she's doing her thing. I've recently been converted to a Rihanna fan.
Oh.
And the reason why is because I just think that she really just does not give a flying, you know what.
Yeah.
Wait, so you weren't a fan before?
I thought that it was more manufactured, you know. I did this piece once where I said, who would have ever thought that I would like Rihanna more than I would like Alicia Keys? And I thought to myself that Alicia Keys kind of is the artist that you grew up thinking, you know, she writes her own stuff, female empowerment, you know.
If you're obligated to like her.
You're obligated to like her because she's kind of like the throwback Roberta Flack. But in the back of my mind, you're just thinking, you're boring, you know. And that's where Rihanna comes in. It's like...
I've never heard those two compared.
Oh, it's an interesting dichotomy when you think about it. You know?
Alicia is very international, I'll say. Like, compared to even Rihanna. And, like, she's really, like, the global pop star, if that makes sense.
She is. I just think that Rihanna is a global superstar, meaning... She does not have to release an album anymore. She goes outside and is about what she's wearing. To me, she captures what celebrity is today. Alicia Moore captures
the old guard.
Alicia, yeah. It's kind of like Alicia captures the old guard with Clive Davis. And we can make a star. We can do this show, kid. You know, follow me type of thing. And Rihanna's like, fuck you. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to wear a T-shirt. Blow. I'm going to show everything. I don't care. You know.
Yeah. I mean, also, it's going back to Clover's favorite topic of today, Beyonce. the fact that she was even brought up says something.
Yes.
And I wasn't expecting for Charlie to bring up Justin Bieber.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Clover's side-eyeing. But
I love Bieber's, like, the R&B stuff that he did.
Right.
Just in comparison to Michael, I just don't think... I just don't take him as seriously as like Beyonce versus Michael. Like, he doesn't have the song catalog yet.
I think his handlers are just doing him a disservice, because on the low, he's probably the most talented artist of his generation. On the low, he is, yes. Like, he plays drums. He does all these different things. He plays guitar. He's a talented cat, but you never know it because, you know, he's always, you know, doing something stupid. And it just overshadows. And plus, he sings stupid songs.
It did overshadow the Journals project was actually really good.
Yeah.
But it came out during a time where he was peeing in buckets.
Yes.
Exactly.
And it just doesn't help. You know, you used to be able to make that transition from child star. But now it's just his stardom is just so big that it's just, I think, I don't know.
Right. I feel like that is a whole other episode.
Yes.
Yep. Of the podcast, especially on the Pop Shop podcast. That would be great. But we have to wrap up. And I appreciate you guys coming through and talking to me about Prince and MJ and talking with me too, with Charlie Murphy.
Thank you, ER.
Thank you.
Look at us. Hey. Thanks, guys.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.